Welcome to Agency in Focus, Department of Homeland Security, sponsored by Leidos. Now here's your host, Tom Temin.
Running a tight ship is a more complex task than ever. In today's Coast Guard, every cutter, boat, or aircraft has embedded navigation and command, control, and communication systems that depend on network technology. Even the propulsion system is connected. It's all got to be protected from cyber threats. Rear Admiral Kevin Lundy is commander of the Coast Guard Cyber Command.
The Coast Guard's focus on cybersecurity and cyber is really driven by the Commandant's direction in the Coast Guard cyber strategy, and that frames how we're responding to the challenges. And our challenges come in two ways. The first is the cybersecurity of our own networks and information systems, the protection of our own information as a strategic asset. And then the other part, which goes to the Coast Guard's mission, primary mission, is the protection of the maritime transportation system, maritime critical infrastructure, from all threats, all hazards, including those from cyber, and the Coast Guard's implementation of our authorities and our capabilities to perform that part of the mission. So in the cyber strategy, which is now about 2.5 years old, and we are executing that direction from the Commandant, the first thing the Commandant said was cyberspace is an operational domain, which means we're going to operate in cyberspace just like we have in the maritime domain for over 227 years. And he laid out three strategic priorities. The first one is operate and defend our own networks and information systems. The second is operate in cyberspace in a way that enables our missions in the maritime domain and the air domain. And then the third is protecting the maritime transportation system from threats from cyberspace. Now, and we're implementing that now.
And often the Coast Guard, just from an operational standpoint, gets phony phone calls, and that's an expensive and dangerous proposition for the Coast Guard. Does the cybersecurity threat extend to that level of activity where people might invent crises or calls for the Coast Guard that don't exist just to get it off its track?
Well, Tom, that's a great question, because the false distress calls or hoax distress calls that are a significant problem for the Coast Guard. It is a federal felony to do that, and it's been a persistent problem that we're getting better at addressing and identifying people that do that, because it places Coast Guard personnel and others that are actually in distress in jeopardy. So we're dealing with that. We have not seen that manifest itself from a cyber threat vector yet, but one of our continuous concerns is ensuring that Coast Guard information systems and networks that our operators depend on to get the mission done are always there for them and reliable. And threats from cyberspace do present risk to those networks and information systems. So in a different way, that can potentially impact operations. And that's a concern for Coast Guard Cyber Command.
And it's easy to envision the ashore networks and the administrative networks and even the classified information that might be there. But when you extend that to maritime and air, what types of networks do those have, and how do they interact with the ashore networks? What's the architecture of all this?
So for all of our Coast Guard assets, platforms, so cutters, aircraft, boats, well, particularly the cutters, they have an extension of our shore-based networks onto the cutters, even when they're underway. But we were also seeing the proliferation of networked technology or operational technology in all of our operational assets. So every cutter, boat, or aircraft these days has not only embedded navigation and command and control and communication systems, but even for example, on a Coast Guard cutter, the hull machinery and equipment that operates that, the main propulsion, depends on network technology that we must harden and protect from cyberspace threats. So for the Coast Guard itself, and Coast Guard Cyber Command, that's a concern. What I would say also is our current office and enterprise networks extend onto our cutters. But we're taking a very close look at all of our network architecture to make sure that we can operate at the tactical edge on a cutter underway at sea in a denied or degraded cyber environment, something that's increasingly likely as we go forward. And so we need to make sure our networks and information systems and communications can operate in that kind of a situation and don't always depend on the assumption that we'll always have connectivity. And so that really requires us to view all of that IT and communications infrastructure as an operational asset of the Coast Guard, what we call an enterprise mission platform. We can't paint a Coast Guard racing stripe and the words U.S. Coast Guard on it, but it's just as important to our operations as our fleet of cutters, boats, and aircraft.
Now, sometimes there are radio communications that are voice between, say, an ashore asset and somewhere far away. Sometimes it's satellite communications. There's different networks that do this. Is there any connection or any kind of IP commonality between what you're doing over voice and radio versus other more internet-style communications?
Sure. Today, we use a combination of radio frequency and satellite communications to extend the shore-based networks to the cutter. And what we really need to do is we take a look at modernizing, is whether that's based on a commercial satellite connection or military satellite communications. What is the right combination that makes the Coast Guard networks most resilient and enables us to conduct all of our operations, even when the cutter may be at a location far at sea where it may be at the edge of commercial satellite coverage, or it may be operating in a situation where someone is trying to degrade our communications. And so that means a different, more deliberate approach for how we structure our communications for our cutters.
We're speaking with Rear Admiral Kevin Lundy. He's commander of the Coast Guard Cyber Command. And any commonality with the Navy, because they have been upgrading the networks aboard their ships, and I think the program is called CANES, and there's a big cyber security component with that. Does that have any commonality with the Coast Guard? Because I know sometimes the assets are common.
It absolutely does, Tom. So the Coast Guard is one of the five military services, and we are part of the joint force. Specifically, we're very closely linked with the Navy. Most Coast Guard cutters, particularly the larger cutters like the National Security Cutter, operate Navy equipment, including Navy combat systems, aboard. And so that interoperability is essential. So as the Navy looks to modernize its warship communications afloat, we're looking also with them at how they do that and how they're moving into the future and how we'll do that as well. That's been accelerated because in January of this year, the Secretary of Defense and Secretary of Homeland Security signed an agreement that the Coast Guard would follow DOD cybersecurity, Department of Defense cybersecurity standards and cyber operations, and its workforce would be patterned after the Department of Defense model to ensure that interoperability as we move forward. So that's a critical piece.
And let's talk about the new generation of ships that are coming one by one into the Coast Guard. What do they have aboard in terms of capabilities electronically before we get to the cyber piece? But what do they offer that the older vessels do not?
So I would say, particularly for the National Security Cutter and our Fast Response Cutter, which are our most recent acquisition programs, they offer increased intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance capability and more standardized navigation systems common to different cutter classes and across the Coast Guard. And also the command and control and communications capability aboard the cutters is improved. We're looking to continue that as we look at the next acquisitions in the offshore patrol cutter, which we've begun that process now, which will be the Coast Guard's largest acquisition program in its history. And then also as we begin the work on the heavy polar icebreaker acquisition, we begin that preliminary work alongside the Navy.
Yeah, that icebreaker program is pretty interesting because those ships operate very often most of the time in the Arctic, which is quite far from a lot of the networks that are available down in the United States and more south. What are the special requirements for ice cutters in cyber and in general electronic capability?
So, Tom, we're in the process, working with the Navy, of developing those requirements right now. And that's the stage of the acquisition cycle that we're in right now, is honing those requirements, you know, with an understanding of the challenging environment in both of the polar regions that the icebreaker will operate in. So that process is underway right now.
Because I imagine those ships, and maybe all the Coast Guard ships, would depend a lot on satellite communications. And what are the particular cyber considerations for satellite communications?
Right. So they do depend heavily on satellite communications. Most of our cutters operate far at sea. And even in the summer months, in the parts of the Arctic that are, you know, close to the U.S. coast off of Alaska, the National Security Cutter will operate in there when it's ice-free, which is increasing in frequency and duration. But we will need the heavy icebreaker to operate there and have assured access throughout the year. And so dependence on satellite communications will be essential. From a cyber perspective, we need those all of our assets, all of our cutters, including the polar icebreaker, to be able to operate not only in an area where, for example, current footprint coverage for satellite communications may be limited, we have to address that, but also in situations where there may be attempts by cyber actors or adversaries to deny communications. And so how can Coast Guard assets operate in that environment? And it's very similar to the discussion that I know the Navy and other services are having.
Because the Arctic is being contested mainly by Russia, and it's become, I guess, a new, no pun intended, Cold War-style place for the United States and Russia. And you must be particularly sensitive to the abilities that Russia possesses to be hackers.
Well, Tom, I would say in the Arctic region, there is both competition and cooperation. So the competition, it really looks forward down, you know, sort of long term. We expect that there may be competition for resources or competing national interests, but we can't overlook the opportunities that we're seeing right now for cooperation through, for example, the Arctic Coast Guard Forum and the Arctic Council, which are bodies where actually the Arctic nations, including Russia, have a forum to sit down and work on areas of mutual interest in cooperation, such as search and rescue for increased human activity up there in the Arctic, and also maritime pollution. And so there are areas of cooperation where Russia is at the table. And at the operational level, the Arctic Coast Guard Forum is a great example of that, even in the broader context where there may be competition between states.
Rear Admiral Kevin Lundy is commander of the Coast Guard Cyber Command. In part two of the interview, we'll hear the human capital side of Coast Guard cybersecurity. I'm Tom Temin.
For 15 years, Leidos has seen firsthand the Department of Homeland Security's men and women safeguard the American people, our homeland, and our values. In support of the DHS mission, our technical experts have delivered trusted solutions in mission-based IT, cybersecurity, biometrics, and logistics. Ranked number one on Washington Technology's top 100, Leidos has the experience DHS can count on, and we're ready for your future missions. Learn more at Leidos.com/homeland.
The Coast Guard recently became the lead agency for cybersecurity for maritime critical infrastructure. That reinforces the dual nature of the Coast Guard. It's part of Homeland Security, but it's also a fifth military service. Rear Admiral Kevin Lundy is the Coast Guard Cyber Command leader. He explains how that dual role translates into personnel and organizational setups.
The Coast Guard strategy for cyber personnel, our workforce, is part of the overall implementation of the Coast Guard cyber strategy. And if, Tom, if I could, for just a moment, there are really five elements to that, and the workforce is one of them. The first is establishing the Coast Guard as a leader for cybersecurity for maritime critical infrastructure. The second is organizing ourselves for cyberspace operations. That relates to the memorandum agreement from January between the two departments. The third is developing a cyberspace workforce. The fourth is organizing ourselves for cyberspace operations and our first operating forces, which ties into that. And then the last is that modernizing the enterprise mission platform, which I talked a little bit about. Let me come back to the workforce. So under that 2017 Memorandum of Agreement, the Coast Guard is going to structure its cyberspace workforce model based on the Department of Defense model, which maps to the National Initiative for Cybersecurity Education model. And that's important. We have to have a common framework that we're aligning to. It also aligns well with the DHS framework, although our primary navigating point, if you will, is the DoD framework. And that will be the structure we use for the total force across the Coast Guard. So active duty and reserve military personnel, civilian personnel as well. How do we set out what the competencies are, what the requirements are, and then how do we recruit, train, retain those people to be able to accomplish the goals of the workforce? We've gotten some significant help in that area. In the fiscal year 2017 appropriations, Congress appropriated almost $4.5 million for 64 billets in fiscal year 17 to help generate the Coast Guard's first Coast Guard Cyber Command's operating forces. Specifically, we're building a cyber protection team modeled on the joint cyber mission force teams. So ours will be the same 39-person team when fully built out. And a part of that team has actually already started over at being embedded in the Department of Homeland Security's operations team, what they call the Hunt and Instant Response Team. So even while we're aligning our workforce with DOD, we remain part of the Department of Homeland Security, and we keep a tie to DHS and their cyberspace mission, too.
In the day-to-day operations of network operations of security centers, how do you divide the work between direct work done by Coast Guardsmen and what you might farm out to contractors?
That's a great question. And Tom, the first thing is we've made some changes in that regard, and we certainly depend on the contractors. But first, I would say our networks, Coast Guard networks, are .mil. They are part of the DOD information networks. And so when we defend our networks, we're defending our part of the DOD information networks. Every day, Coast Guard Cyber Command responds to authoritative orders from Commander U.S. Cyber Command and Commander Joint Force Headquarters DOD information networks on defending our part of the DOD networks. So that's the first part. The second piece, we've made some significant changes. We've taken network operations, which used to be on the mission support side, and now that is part of Coast Guard Cyber Command's mission, so it operates and defends our networks. For that, we do depend significantly on a number of contractors to help us with that work. There's no question, like the other services and other agencies, the contractor workforce is part of our overall force.
And if you would describe what happens in the Coast Guard's Intelligence Fusion Center and how that whole system works.
On the intelligence program side within the Coast Guard, it has three primary intelligence centers. The first national center is the Intelligence Coordination Center here in Washington, D.C. But out at the operational level on each coast, the Coast Guard has two maritime intelligence fusion centers, one in the Bay Area near San Francisco and then the other in Virginia Beach. And I had the privilege of commanding the center in Virginia Beach. What the intelligence fusion centers do is they take all source intelligence from the intelligence community, from law enforcement community, and from other sources, including open source, and they bring that together or fuse it together and then provide it to Coast Guard operators and operational commanders in order to meet their requirements to help get the Coast Guard mission done. They also take information that has been observed, in some cases gathered by Coast Guard units or assets that may meet national DHS requirements or intel community requirements, and they report that up appropriately through channels.
Coast Guard Rear Admiral Kevin Lundy is commander of the Cyber Command. I'm Tom Tamman.
For 15 years, Leidos has seen firsthand the Department of Homeland Security's men and women safeguard the American people, our homeland, and our values. In support of the DHS mission, our technical experts have delivered trusted solutions in mission-based IT, cybersecurity, biometrics, and logistics. Ranked number one on Washington Technology's top 100, Leidos has the experience DHS can count on, and we're ready for your future missions. Learn more at Leidos.com/homeland.
We're speaking with Rear Admiral Kevin Lundy. He's commander of Coast Guard Cyber Command. So it sounds like Coast Guard is very highly matrixed in the sense of being the fifth DOD military service, but also being technically or legally part of the Homeland Security Department.
Tom, that's exactly right. The Coast Guard is a unique instrument of national security. We're not a large organization, but we have a very specific role as a member of the Joint Force, one of the five military services that is the only military service located within DHS. That presents some unique opportunities, not only for the two departments, but for the nation in terms of how the Coast Guard contributes to not only the national defense, but the border security of the United States, but also the economic prosperity, given how much the U.S. relies on the maritime transportation system to run the economy. Not only international trade, global trade, coming and going from the U.S., but also the internal river system that is so vital to the movement of goods and cargo inside the United States.
And with respect to cybersecurity, what does the threat environment look like these days? What are you seeing in terms of the types of threats, the velocity of threats? Is it pretty much in line with what every agency is seeing, or do you have a perspective from the Coast Guard standpoint that might be a little unique to the Coast Guard?
Tom, I would say first, in the same ways that other organizations are looking at cyberspace, we're seeing the threat evolving in complexity and also in risk. So we're seeing the increase of less sophisticated actors have greater ability to enter the space and cause an effect and present threats. And I would say we're also seeing, based on statements of other senior leadership, the growing capability of nation states to present threats to not only to the military and its networks, but to U.S. critical infrastructure. And that presents a concern. For the Coast Guard, I mentioned we operate and defend our own networks against those threats, just like the other military services. But our role for critical infrastructure is different. The Coast Guard has its own statutory authority to protect the maritime transportation system, including from cyber threats. And so our concern is, how do we work with maritime industry, both ship operators, owners and operators, and also maritime facility owners and operators in our transportation system to ensure that not only we, but they are also able to protect their systems because they own and operate most of the critical infrastructure in the space. So the Coast Guard's been working very hard with industry to first build awareness of the cybersecurity threats and risks and how to improve preparedness by, for example, implementing standard cybersecurity standards or best practices from authoritative sources like NIST or the American Bureau of Shipping or other recognized third-party authorities. The second phase has been beginning to put in place standards that they'll follow. So, for example, the Coast Guard has issued a draft navigation and vessel inspection circular. It's essentially guidance. It's not a regulation, but it's guidance that's out for comment on improving cybersecurity across maritime facilities in the United States. And that's a great example of working with industry to achieve a common set of standards. We're also doing that internationally. The Coast Guard leads the U.S. delegation to the International Maritime Organization of the UN, and we're working within that construct to set international standards for ships and port facilities, so because they are, you know, greatly interconnected, and that enables us to better manage the risk and threats from cyberspace.
Yeah, I was surprised to learn recently how far afield the Coast Guard does operate, even other hemispheres and other continents in a few cases. So what special challenges does that present on the cyber front when you're closely interacting with other nations in their waters and not in the United States coastal waters?
So we're always concerned about protecting our own networks and information systems wherever our people or our assets are operating in the Coast Guard. I would say we look at our global presence, and it's although it's not large, it is very global and it's important. So, for example, we may have a Coast Guard international training team operating in Africa or in Eastern Europe, providing training on maritime security and safety. We have international port security liaison officers that travel to foreign ports to assess their compliance with international standards. Those same types of standards that the International Maritime Organization puts out that I mentioned before. And so we have Coast Guard people traveling globally and Coast Guard cutters that operate around the world as well. And so first we have to ensure their own cybersecurity. And then I would say beyond that, it provides an opportunity to engage on issues like setting standards and improving cybersecurity at port facilities and on ships globally.
Coast Guard Rear Admiral Kevin Lundy is commander of the Cyber Command. There's more to the interview. We'll post it in its entirety at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. Subscribe to all of our interviews at iTunes or Podcast One. I'm Tom Tamman.
Thank you for listening to Agency in Focus, Department of Homeland Security, sponsored by Leidos on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. The entire program can be found on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search DHS 15.